Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
You are listening to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith. Greetings to you wherever you may be, and Happy New Year as we enter this first episode of TDY for 2015. Let me bring in and wish a very good evening to my co-host, Mr. Corey Chatelain.
Yeah, remember, 2015, or as we're going to be referring to it throughout the year, 1 AD in the soccer world after Donovan. But yeah, I'm starting the new year out on the training table. I got a crocked back, so I'm hoping to pick up a loan from Arsenal like Kim Kallstrom last year.
And not play and still get paid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, jacked my back up, changed my car battery on Saturday. Wasn't any fun.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but me too.
If you can get through the pain, may we get to some football talk for this week, sir?
Yes, we can.
All right, let's do it. All right, again, no rundown, much to talk about, and we just want to get to it. So let's just first talk about the glory that was the soccer on New Year's Day, or New Year's morning for most of us, I guess. And it was a very entertaining morning that ended the festive holiday fixture season, and it ended up being the highest scoring in New Year's Day in Premier League history. With something about, I can't remember the exact number, I tried to look it up, 32 or 33 goals were scored on the day. And I guess one of the main highlights, Corey, was the coverage by NBC and what they were deeming EPL breakaway coverage, which was basically their flip-around coverage, or for those who are unfamiliar, it was basically your NFL red zone type of coverage. Yes, or simulcast, to where they're just bouncing around the different grounds and showing highlights of what just happened. So tell me your thoughts on this type of coverage.
I watched most everything on replay, so I didn't actually see it live. Personally, I'm not a fan of that coverage because I tend to be somebody who likes to, you know, engross myself in a whole game, and then, you know, if I watch other games, you know I'll tape them or record them to watch later, because like I said, I personally don't like to hop around, mainly because in soccer it doesn't, you know, it's, since it's not a platoon, or not a platoon, but since it's not a very segregated sport like football with your very specific offensive and defensive platoons and offensive possessions, that it's kind of hard to gauge when to watch, certain points in a match, you know, other than maybe, you know, like last year, Liverpool liked to score a lot of goals early, so, you know, it would have been one of those, you know, watch the first 20 minutes of a Liverpool match, and, you know, you kind of got an idea of what was going to happen in the game. I heard you saying that there was there seemed to be a lot of kind of 50-50 on its reception, where there seemed to be a lot of people who didn't like it and then a lot of people who did like it. Like I said, personally, I don't really care for that type of coverage, because it just doesn't – I don't think the format fits well with the way soccer doesn't really have any stoppages or there's no real I'm not sure how to say it. There's no real distinct time periods where there's a lot of scoring. So, like I said, it's kind of, you kind of have to guess where to jump around.
Exactly. So, yeah, a lot of people had complaints of, you know, you don't really get a good feel for what's happening in the game. What formations are people using? You know, what kind of tactics are they playing on the counter? Who's playing well as an individual player? Stuff like that. You really don't get the flow of the game. And the biggest problem is most of the time they wouldn't be showing stuff live because, as you said, there's no breaks. So they would just say, hey, something happened at this ground, and they would show a replay of what happened maybe, you know, a minute or two ago. So it's really not live coverage. Now, I thought it was what made it fairly successful and exciting is, as I said, it was the highest scoring New Year's Day ever in the Premier League. And that's what made it exciting because they're always breaking away to goals. So just say if you went to a normal day where there's half as many as goals scored, then that type of coverage would, I think, it would fizzle quite a bit. So I don't know if we'll see this type of coverage again in the future. Maybe on the last day of the year.
Yeah, so
it may work.
Yeah, I was going to say, because in some countries, sometimes that's what they do on the last day of the season as they're, you know, as matches come down to the end, and it's, you know, there's title deciders or relegation deciders that come down to the last minute. But yes, like I said, since I didn't see it live, I didn't realize it was there was a delay to it. Now with the delay, obviously, you know, you have some, you're able to implement a strategy better of where to jump around because, you know, you can have people watching monitors to which you can then say, like, you know, like you said, oh, something happened in this game, so let's go to that. So with a, you know, with a 2 or 3 minute delay kind of thing, that I could definitely see it working a lot better than, like I said, I thought it was more like a live red zone type of coverage where you just go to something live.
That's what I was thinking as well. But no, most of the times they were showing you what had just happened at a certain ground. So that does take away kind of the authenticity to me. And as you said, soccer isn't a sport where you have, you know, set time stops. And about the only time they did show live stuff is when there was a set piece. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the only time they say, hey, there's a free kick.
Because there's a stoppage, right?
Yeah, so it's interesting, and I don't know if it'll be interesting to see what feedback NBC gets and what their decision makers decide on for the future, but I don't think we'll see this again this year until the very last day of the season. And it probably won't be on the main NBC channel, though they may put that type of coverage, you know, on one of their other networks to where if you don't really care about any of the games, you can get an idea of what's going on everywhere. So I could see that being really successful on the last day of the year where, you know, if the title's up for grabs or relegation spots, as you said, or places in Europe. So that is my thoughts on that.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm definitely not the best person to ask about that because I generally – that's one of those kind of formats that even when it's done well, I personally don't care for it anyway because, like I said, I'm the type of person I like to emotionally invest myself in games – or, you know, in a game in its 90-minute entirety. And like I said, in soccer, I don't like to jump around from game to game.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people on social media were making that exact same point. Now, I was going to mention something else here related to this. And I forget. No, now I do remember. Also related to social media would be the fact that a lot of people were complaining that this is just another American gimmick to get people to watch this. Please tell them, Corey, why are they wrong? Why is this not this wraparound coverage, not a gimmick, an American gimmick?
Mainly because the Ligue 1 and the Bundesliga have been doing weekly simulcasts for the better part of at least 3 years, I think. In France, it's one of the Canal channels, and I forget the TV station in Germany that does it, but yeah, they've been doing weekly simulcast coverage, and that's kind of why when I saw that NBC had done this, I had assumed it was, you know, jumping around live from game to game, because that's the way the Ligue 1 and the Bundesliga simulcast do it, is they basically just kind of jump around from game to game, and they'll take about 2 to 3 minute snippets from each game, and then, like I said, they'll just constantly jump around within the league. And then obviously, you know, when it kind of looks like there's, like, you know, like you were saying, the way they did it here, if there's set pieces or if there's passages of play in games where it looks like a goal's coming, they'll try and jump to those games. But like I said, the Ligue 1 and the Bundesliga have been doing this for at least 2 or 3 years that I can recall, and I think La Liga did one for a while. But yeah, but like I said, I know the Ligue 1 and Bundesliga definitely have done this coverage before, and then like I said, they do it weekly.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, what NBC decides to do, and maybe in the future they do decide to do this again, that they will, you know, focus on more live coverage than, you know, showing something that happened a minute or two ago.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and like I said, it's one of those that I'm neither for or against it. Like I said, I just personally, I would prefer it kind of like what you said, where, you know, if they're going to go with the concept, have it on a specific channel to where you can go view it, not as part as, you know, not as part as the main coverage or something.
Exactly. And I think that's my prediction. That's what will happen on the last day of the year. They'll have one of their sister channels. They'll have that type of coverage.
Yeah, like on CNBC or something.
Yeah, and they'll have the games everywhere else if you want to watch. Now, they must be – so they should be commended for trying it. You know, there's no harm in trying it. And so we'll see. Now, they were very successful wrapping up their coverage that day, you know, after, you know, doing their goal zone and doing their live match of the day. They ended up their coverage with the EPL download episode about Southampton, which, if you have not seen yet,
it's a very good episode.
Was very, very good. So you get a look at the inner workings of that club and why they've been so, you know, the English system from League One just 5 years ago to now one of the most in vogue EPL sides.
Yeah, and one of the sides that has arguably the best current youth setup in England, with, you know, state of the art equipment, where 5-6 years ago they were, as they said in the episode, the kit manager and the one of the physios was rating, which I thought was pretty funny. They were rating when they would play away matches at other clubs' grounds, they would raid the home locker room after the match for any unused, like, sports drinks and athletic tape to try and save money. So like I said, you know, and five or six years later, they're now in the EPL and they now have arguably the most state-of-the-art youth program, with all sorts of, you know, computerized analytics and performance data. So like I said, it's definitely a good story. You know, it's definitely a good story. You know, I mean, I was a fan of Southampton, or, you know, not in the supporting sense, but Southampton's one of those clubs, it's hard not to like them as a neutral, or because, like I said, they've always had a good youth system. They've always, you know, put an emphasis on recruiting both local talent and, as they again stated in detail in the episode, that they tend to try and find guys that are really talented that maybe the bigger clubs passed on because, you know, maybe they're a couple inches shorter, or maybe because, you know, they're a few pounds lighter and, you know, they don't think they could cut, you know, physically hack it in the English game. But, you know, if they have a little technical quality to them, Southampton will not only take you, but also, you know, make the investment and try and develop you longer than, or not that they don't do it for longer than a year at the bigger clubs, but they tend to give guys a little more time to develop and show what they can do at Southampton. So, like I said, it's definitely one of those episodes, if you're a fan of the EPL, or, you know, you're kind of looking for a club to support, or if you're kind of curious to how youth setups are elsewhere and how clubs operate in an open system, it's one of the episodes that I highly advise people watch. Although the episode did stray kind of into the propaganda realm towards the end, like I said, it's definitely I would definitely highly recommend watching that episode of Premier Download.
Yes, the breadth and the depth that they go into and developing their players and all this analytics and all this scouting is really unheard of. So it was pretty exciting to get behind that. And one of the things, and we've talked about this in the past off-air, Corey, is they kind of brought up that computerized scouting system that they use called the Black Box.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read a lot about that. And they're able, somehow they hook it into where they record basically any game in the world that's on TV. Mm-hmm. And they're able to use the video to extract that data out to get, you know, statistics on players to go into their worldwide scouting database. And so that's pretty insane. And it should be noted that, and as I told you, this is what brought it up, is that Spurs and Mauricio Pochettino has actually got the guy who was the head of Southampton's analytics, who actually helped develop that software, is now at Spurs. Mm-hmm. So it'll be really interesting to see how Spurs use this system in the future, you know, with a little bit more money behind them, to see, you know, mixing money with analytics, how much success can you have doing that?
Yeah, because the thing that's interesting about that is when you say that program is able to extract statistics from practically any match, you know, we're talking about the in-depth kind of advanced analytical statistics that that, you know, coaching staffs and scouts use, not necessarily the, you know, the kind of publicly known, like, Opta type stats, where, I mean, those stats are obviously useful too, but you know, we're not talking about, like, just simple passing completion statistics and runs this and there. You know, we're talking about the kind of advanced statistics where each part of the field is broken up into a zone, which I forget offhand how many they are. It's like 28 or something. So then there's all these actions that happen with each player in these zones that they're able to extract. So like I said, it's not just simple or what would be considered simple statistics from an actual statistical analysis standpoint of, like, passing completion and shots on target and that kind of stuff. So like I said, that's what I thought was interesting, is that not only is it able to grab all those games, it's able to do those, or, you know, it's able to extract all those advanced statistics basically from the visual coverage, which I found pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that episode, if you have not seen it, you should do so. I'm sure they'll be replaying it on the channel, but as most everybody who follows, you do have your cable subscription, so you're able to log into NBC and I think watch it online as well.
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
So watch that. Pretty cool. So it was a great day to wrap up New Year's and the coverage that NBC provided. No, I didn't have this on the rundown, but I forgot. But I did record the annual, I guess, which is now the second annual, Two Daft Yanks Holiday Fixtures Table. And speak of the devil, guess who are the champions of this year's four-game holiday festive activities, Corey?
It was Southampton, wasn't it?
Yes, Southampton Football Club wins on goal difference.
Yeah.
10 points. 10 points. The three teams getting 10 points were Southampton, Manchester City, and Tottenham over that time. But Southampton had a +7 goal differential compared to Manchester City +6 and Tottenham +4. So Southampton is the second annual TDY Holiday Fixture Table champions.
Yeah, which I'm sure, wait for it, Lucy Pender was probably chuffed as nuts to win, yes, such a prestigious trophy.
She was probably parading around in lingerie everywhere.
Yeah, which is pretty funny since the magazine that she shows up in the most is also called Nuts.
Jeez.
So, chuffed as nuts.
Yes, other things to take away from this holiday table. In terms of, you know, moving up the table, the biggest mover was Hull City, who climbed 4 spots, gaining just 6 points. And Liverpool gained 3 spots in the table, scoring 8 points. The biggest losers included West Ham, who dropped 3 spots, scoring 8 points. And then The other two were the joint bottoms, which had very bad fixtures this holiday season. West Brom only took 1 point out of their four games, dropping three spots. And Everton lost every single one, recording 0 points and dropping three spots in the league table.
Yeah, they're relegated from the holiday table from Christmas to like Arbor Day or something.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe we should do
some non-bank holiday or something.
Yeah, maybe I should do that. I should calculate the championship teams and promote them for the next year in the holiday table.
Yeah, or just have it named like the whatever would be considered the worst holiday. That's like our version of the wooden spoon, you know.
Yeah.
It's like you win Arbor Day, Everton. You don't even get off work.
Yeah. So Everton with 0 points. A lot of talk about Roberto Martinez. We refuse to call him Martinez.
Yeah, I hate that
on this show.
He is
Roberto Martinez. He is, you know, under a little bit of pressure. Do you think he deserves to be so?
Not sure, because obviously everybody's going to be under some pressure in the EPL, and especially with Everton doing so well last year, that they were one of those clubs that were kind of tabbed to, you know, do the old kick on and move up the table. So there were, you know, a lot of people had Everton kind of pegged for one of those clubs that was maybe going to knock, us at Arsenal or, you know, leapfrog over Spurs and, you know, possibly get into that fourth spot or that final Champions League spot in fourth. So obviously those people are obviously disappointed. And then there's been, I've seen stuff where people are also disappointed because it seems like Martinez has put emphasis in doing well in the Europa League at the sake of, you know, the domestic cups and the EPL, because some people feel that he's done that because he's using Everton maybe as a stepping stone to a bigger club or, a bigger club back in Spain. With, you know, I've seen rumors, people claiming that, you know, he's trying to maybe eventually get the Barcelona job. So obviously that's a lot of conjecture and speculation. But, you know, usually when you don't make the league a priority, that's always going to rile up a lot of people. And like I said, especially in England, the Europa League isn't a highly thought of competition. So putting your emphasis on that, like I said, you're going to annoy a lot of people, even though, you know, a lot of those same people would still parade around with the Europa League if they won it. So like I said, there's going to be people that are just always going to be kind of underwhelmed at what you do, especially if you drop, you know, if you finish worse in the league than you did the year before.
Yeah, well, remember, the winner of the Europa League this year gets a spot in the Champions League.
Right, which is part of the reason why the people who are backing Martinez for doing that, that's their logic, is that, well, this year it's different because, like you said, that winner gets a spot in the Champions League.
Mm-hmm, exactly. All right, let's skip ahead. So New Year's was great, but then starting up has been an incredibly extended FA Cup round, as far as I can remember, with games stretching from last Friday clear to, I think, even Tuesday and Wednesday. I know there's games tomorrow, but I think there's a game Wednesday even. Well, so the FA Cup is being way stretched out.
Was a replay, is it not, or no?
Wait, it could be, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think the game on Wednesday is a replay, but yeah, I don't recall offhand a last time, because usually FA Cups are cup matches are reserved for Saturday. Obviously, in recent years they've moved some matches to Sunday for TV, because if you recall, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, there was that big hullabaloo in one of the matches because I think it was one of the Welsh teams or one of the Midlands teams or something. The fans were complaining because the match got – not only was it like a late Sunday start, but the match got delayed, which of course meant that when it went to extra time, they missed the last train out of town. So they were like basically like stuck in London overnight or something. Mm-hmm. So back to my original point is that I don't recall the last time that, you know, like you said, FA Cup matches have been stretched to over 4 days within the same weekend without counting replays.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So let's just kind of run down some of the highlights of this weekend. I'm looking at the scores here. You had Cambridge United, the lowest, you know, ranked team if you look at tables. Or they're the lowest ranked team to win. They beat Luton Town 2-1. Former Premier League side Norwich lost to Preston. Blyth Spartans gave Birmingham a run for the money.
Blyth Spartans, who are apparently followed by Barack Obama, I heard. Not sure how or why. Somebody on Twitter said that Barack Obama actually follows Blyth Spartans.
I don't believe that.
I don't know if he's joking or not.
Oh, he had to have been joking. Let's see, championship side Dynamos this year. Bournemouth beat Rotherham, so they're on to the next round. Let's see here. Brighton, who's been struggling in the championship, beat Brentford. Fulham and Wolves, we talked about that last week. They went to a 0-0 draw, so they have a replay. Leicester beat Newcastle United. And then Middlesbrough beat Barnsley. In terms of, you know, upsets, the only real big one is Sheffield United beating QPR. Sunderland held off Leeds 1-0. We talked about Blackpool. There was no Tangerine Dream. Christian Benteke scored a late goal to boost Aston Villa over the Tangerines.
Yeah, Tangerine Nightmare.
Yeah. And then you had Manchester United, you know, had to wait late to score their goals against Yeovil Town.
Yeah, although I watched that match before the Arsenal game, and that was one of those that you could tell Man U was basically keeping Yeovil at bay. I mean, even when Yeovil broke forward in numbers, they just didn't have the quality to make those chances mean much.
Yeah, no doubt. And it was almost – I tweeted this when both games were at halftime because it was 0-0. And then I think Manchester City was losing, but I do it. Hashtag Manchester FA Cup crisis. But they got bailed out of that. Manchester City gets by on a James Milner brace, including a goal in the 90th minute, to get past Sheffield Wednesday. Or as you like to say, you have a new name for him.
Sheffield Hump Day.
Yeah, there we go. I like that. Sheffield Hump Day.
I'm just saying that might be what they were named if they were formed today.
Come on, you camels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, you humpers.
And so there really wasn't a lot of upsets. Really, QPR is the only real major one. But are you really that surprised that a team in the relegation zone lost? You know, can you be surprised by that? And another one.
Not really.
Yeah, and I guess – and Spurs drew Burnley today, so there'll be a replay next week back at White Hart Lane, which isn't too surprising to me considering, you know, Spurs being Spurs, you beat Chelsea at home and then you go to Burnley and can't beat them. You give up a garbage goal. So, you know, those are the highs and lows of English football and the magic of the FA Cup.
Yeah, well, and like I said, in the Nuggets, that's the beauty of cup competitions is that, you know, obviously this weekend it didn't happen a lot, but some clubs raise their game because they know, you know, it's a knockout competition, win and move on. So, you know, in some years that's why those clubs are able to do that because it's basically based on the any given day format that, you know, like I said, win and move on, lose and go home. So some of those clubs come in and, you know, they say, like, well, let's take our shot now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I should also mention that West Brom beat Gateshead 7-0. strength of a Berahino hat trick.
Yeah, which Berahino is one of those names that's starting to be linked with bigger clubs.
Yes, which they would be wise to stay away, in my opinion. But anyway, looking at the schedule, I was wrong. There are no games on Wednesday. But tomorrow, Tuesday, there is a big one. Everton will be hosting West Ham.
Yeah. Watch out for your pies when Sam comes to town.
Mm-hmm.
Watch out for your toffee.
All right. We have a number of replays as well next week. Let's just run these down, and then we'll look at the fourth round draw. So, as we said, replays include Wolves will be hosting Fulham. Bristol City will be hosting Doncaster. Bradford will be hosting Millwall. Ipswich will be hosting Southampton. I guess I forgot about Southampton, Drew. Ipswich, so that's kind of surprising. And then Tottenham will be hosting Burnley.
Burnley.
So those are your replay matches. And so looking at the fourth round draw, Corey, what stands out to you?
Shoot. Hold on. This is the third round. All right.
That's okay. I got the fourth round here. Big ones include big clubs will be Arsenal will be traveling to Brighton. Manchester City will be hosting Middlesbrough. Let's see. Manchester United will be playing at Cambridge United.
Yeah, see, why didn't this isn't listed? Huh.
Chelsea will be hosting Millwall or Bradford City, and we're all hoping for Millwall to make it through.
Yeah, that'd be
their replay.
One of the old firm derbies where
it'd be like a brass knuckles London derby.
if that match was played in the 70s and 80s, there would definitely be high chance of crowd trouble.
You got Aston Villa versus Bournemouth. That could be pretty good. Cardiff City versus Reading. Tottenham or Burnley will host Leicester. So that's another all EPL matchup. And then Everton or West Ham will travel to Doncaster or Bristol City. So there's a lot of replays coming around, and those will be played next week, as we said. So there is your fourth cup draw. Yeah, your fourth round cup draw. And the glory that is the FA Cup.
Yeah, which, like I said, people that are starting to say that, oh, it's starting to lose its luster and it's not as big as a competition. I say boo to you people. Boo. Boo, sir. I say boo because I still like the cup.
I'm with you there for sure. And, you know, the people spearheading this movement is the media. Well, you know what, media? If you think that's wrong, you could give more importance to the FA Cup. And then it wouldn't be an afterthought anymore. So you're part of the problem.
Yeah, and obviously a lot of people, because of the growth of the Champions League and, you know, the money and the prestige that goes with that competition, a lot of people nowadays prefer to watch the Champions League, where personally I'm one of those old farts that obviously I want to win the Champions League, but, you know, I'm league first, Champions League's and FA Cup second, League Cup far distant fourth. And like I said, in most years, since I know Arsenal legitimately can't really win it, I prefer the Cup, or I prefer the FA Cup. So.
Okay, and I forget that already the next round of the FA Cup will be played on the weekend of January 24th.
Yes.
So we're just three weeks away from that. So, and, you know, there's some big names left, but with, you know, a fair bit amount of, you know, EPL versus EPL matches, you know, some teams are getting knocked out. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Corey, your prediction that a non-EPL side or a lower table EPL side could win could very well come true.
Yeah, which, you know, maybe it'll be Southampton.
Maybe. We'll see what their analytical computer spits out.
Yeah, add to their one major trophy in 74, I believe it was, when they won the FA Cup.
So, all right. So that is the FA Cup roundup this week. Now, another important thing that happened over the weekend was Saturday was the opening of the transfer window.
Whoopee! Knock, knock.
Transfer window's open. Ding dong. Open up that bank account. Get ready to get those players purchased.
And do what?
And do what? What do you mean do what? Win games.
No, and spend some fucking money.
Spend some fucking money, yes. Now, the January window is always very perplexing to me because you always see these media reports about, oh, all these teams are looking to spend, but usually it never happens. So is the January window more hype than anything?
Yes. Yeah, because mainly when journalists write those articles nowadays, it's basically on the premise that, well, this is the opinion of what this team needs, so therefore these clubs are looking to spend, when a lot of times these clubs maybe aren't really looking to spend unless something becomes available. Because a lot of times, overpriced as the summer window has become, January window, the values have, in many recent years, guys go for far too much money than what they're worth because a lot of people, claim that these clubs know that these are, certain clubs know that other clubs are desperate for players, so, they'll slap on $6-7 million more than maybe they're worth and basically, price gouge a club, kind of like Andy Carroll. I definitely think, I'm one of those people where both transfer windows has become tedious at best and hard to tolerate because of all the madness and the rumors and the people going bonkers when clubs don't buy players and then they turn against each other because, oh, well, you said this and you said that, we need this and we need that. So the January transfer window is very overrated to me.
Okay, now, you have found a very interesting article dating back from the last transfer window, but I never saw this and I didn't see anybody talk about it, so we will now. But it's basically, it's a organization out of Switzerland that has put together some type of algorithm that measures the value of every player in the five major leagues. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was the larger European leagues.
Okay, so just kind of explain a little to our listeners what this is all about and what kind of success rate they've had with this algorithm.
I was going to say, I can't really explain the algorithm because the article...
Well, I know, but...
Yeah.
But explain to me the idea behind it.
Yeah, well, the idea is to try and better quantify in a more actual financial sense what players are actually worth and not the kind of convoluted, what would be deemed the traditional players market value where there's kind of a amorphous player value that basically the clubs and the managers that are selling and buying kind of come to their own conclusion, where the secondary transfer algorithm is more along the lines of, and again, I'm not saying this is what Arsene Wenger uses, but being that it is a Swiss economic outfit that put this together, and because Wenger has a master in economics, that I'm sure this is the kind of more actual financial base sort of algorithm that, like I said, that they use to get an actual financial value on them that can be trusted better. Because according to this article, this algorithm has guessed with just over 80% accuracy what players will actually be sold for, And then obviously, you know, there's the 20% where player, you know, where players are sold more for what they're worth or sold less for what they're worth, which, you know, a couple of the big examples they used was that Manchester United paid, the algorithm valued Angel Di Maria around £36 million, and Man United actually paid just under $60 million for him. So according to this algorithm, Man United paid $24 million over the market or over the actual market value. But conversely, they actually Liverpool, as poorly as Balotelli has played, Liverpool actually paid under market value for Balotelli. And then, of course, they noted because Balotelli could be argued that he's valued less because of, you know, non-sporting circumstances is the way they deemed it. But they did go on to say in the article, or they did go on to explain in the article that, you know, obviously each case is individual and that these prices are always in flux and that because of certain circumstances, when a club overpays or underpays for a player, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're paying bad money, because obviously in Man United's case, when they really wanted the player, you know, it's kind of like think of it as a, you know, big tipper versus a little tipper. Man United obviously wanted this player, so they basically left Real a bigger tip than another club, so to speak.
There we go. So we will link this article to the blog of this podcast so you can read it for yourself. It's pretty interesting, and it points out a lot of different things that most people don't think of in terms of transfers. So it's well worth your reading.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, fans are going to argue over who's overpaid and or you know, who's overvalued and undervalued all day long, because you know, as we've intimated all along, that, you know, everybody's kind of got their idea of who's worth what and who's overrated and who's underrated. But like I said, I just found it an interesting article, because like most things out there in sports now, you've got people from actual other industry backgrounds putting their industry knowledge into effect in the sporting world, so, you know, to give a much more concrete idea, or, you know, much more concrete value or idea of what those players are actually worth.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. All right, so be sure to check out all your tabloid back pages for your insane rumors. What's the big rumor today from Instagram, nonetheless, Corey?
Yeah, according to Instagram and Twitter, Messi's on his way to Chelsea, because just this morning, both he and his girlfriend, see, that's the key, both he and his girlfriend started following Chelsea on both Twitter and Instagram.
Oh, my goodness. Shock move.
I mean, when the girlfriend follows the club, I mean, it's got to be true, right?
Well, yeah, because women don't lie.
Yeah, and there's not, like, people who work for these players who actually run these accounts, which people always forget.
If I was a professional footballer, I would do all kinds of crazy stuff, following, like, different people in clubs and then unfollowing them, like, every other day just to see what people would report. Like, if I was him, I'd follow some club in Iceland.
Well, but like I said, that's what cracks me up about people, is that they think it's actual Lionel Messi running the Lionel Messi official account.
Mm-hmm. Or Finland, the club in Finland. If I was Messi, I would follow Santa Claus FC.
Yeah.
Yeah, Messi to make shock move to North Pole FC, Santa Claus FC.
Yeah, or, you know, like I saw somebody on my Twitter line tweets, like, it was actually the same guy who claimed that Barack Obama followed Blythe Spartans, because that's the one he's like, well, I just noticed Barack Obama follows Blythe Spartans. Does that mean he's going to manage them one day?
Maybe.
It's like, well, I don't know. Yeah, maybe if they have an open election, who knows?
Okay, well, speaking of Messi, this will get us into our last topic of the show, and that is La Liga giants in crisis.
Dun, dun, dun.
Crisis, I say, for the La Liga Giants. Both Real and Barcelona lost yesterday after their winter breaks. They lost their first matches, including Barcelona's loss to one David Moyes.
Oh, man, you should go back and hire him.
How did he do that?
He's now a continental genius.
He could be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Big Willie. Big Willie Moyes. No, they don't call him that. I've seen that a few times. Anyway, but after Barcelona's loss and Real's loss, so, you know, it's not very often that they both lose. It's kind of crazy. But Barcelona today, in response to said loss, has fired, or sacked, I guess to use soccer language, what's his position again? I already forget. Director of football, Andoni Zubizarreta.
That's Barcelona, not Real, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, Barcelona. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did I say Real?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, yes, Barcelona did. My bad. So Barcelona fired their director of football, who was a former player of theirs, as well as other club favorite, Carlos Puyol, a.k.a. the Caveman, who was also serving in a back office role. He resigned his position. And the rumors are that Messi is very upset with manager Luis Enrique and that he very well may be sacked in the coming days as well. So all is not good in the land of, you know, sweetheart TV deals and bank loans.
Well, yeah, apparently Messi's so upset he's following Chelsea on Instagram now. And I you know, he's like the old lady on that commercial, I unfriend you. I unfriend you. No, that's not how it works. See, he unfriended Luis Enrique on Facebook. It means he's going to be fired.
Yeah. Who knows? So it is interesting, and it very well may be an overreaction, but we'll see what happens. But, I mean, these rumblings have been going on for a while, and I didn't think that Messi would leave Barcelona anytime in the future, but it's a definite possibility unless the club gets, you know, their affairs in order and get people in key positions to his liking.
Yeah, and I can only imagine that because of the constant pressure that's placed on Messi, you know, because what was it, 2 years ago when he hadn't scored in like four matches, everybody was starting to write those articles about has he lost it, and then of course the last 2 years he's basically gone on to break world scoring records every year. So I can only imagine that, you know, in the modern day and age, it's got to be really hard to play at a club like Barcelona when you're a guy like that, when you know, when you got certain fans out there that will actually think that if you only score one goal in that game that you somehow underperformed, you know?
Yeah, like the people say, well, Messi, all he does is score goals.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the
he
point,
doesn't
right?
doesn't offer anything else.
Yeah, it's like
that's the point of the game, is it not?
Yeah, it's like a banker. All he does is make money. Well, what else are you supposed to do? All a banker cares about is money.
So, you know, it'll be interesting to watch here.
It's like, oh, I don't like the bartender. All he does is make drinks.
Well, that guy's a hero.
Yeah, well, but as I'm saying, you probably got people out there like, I don't understand why this bartender's not talking to me more. All he does is make drinks.
Oh, boy.
But yeah, so like I was telling you off air, that's why part of me hopes Arsenal never becomes a true super club, because these super clubs always have to make these knee-jerk reaction moves in response to nutty fans and nutty directors and, you know, all the because of the intense media scrutiny that's out there nowadays, and the you know, what used to be the 24-hour day news cycle, which obviously means it doesn't end, but that nowadays, because of social media, it's almost like you have a 30-hour news cycle in a 24-hour news cycle.
Mm-hmm. Now, it should be noted that in the La Liga table, with the loss by Real and Barcelona, Atletico Madrid actually won their match, so we are back to, you know, that three-headed race that we had last year, which made for some, you know, some great entertainment. Real Madrid leads the league on 39 points. Barcelona's in second on 38 points. And Atletico Madrid is in third on 38 points. But Barcelona's got a plus 33 goal differential. Atletico Madrid only plus 19. And Real's already up to a plus 41. So it'll be interesting to see if we can match the drama from last year with Real, Barcelona, and Atletico all vying for a La Liga title.
Well, yeah, well, this year and last year, this is kind of how La Liga used to be in the late 80s and early 90s, where you would have these three clubs basically vying for the championship every year with, you know, maybe Sevilla every once in a while kind of popping up, making a challenge, or Valencia in the late 90s too. But, you know, obviously Atletico fell on some hard financial times in the late 90s and early 2000s and kind of fell off the map for a while. But, yeah, so it's good to see that Spain is now back to kind of being a three-horse race instead of the two-horse race it had become.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see. And so there may be big changes if Messi has his way.
Yeah.
Messi, all he does is get managers sacked and score goals.
Yeah, and apparently, you know, lights the Instagram world on fire by who he follows.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, folks, that's going to wrap up the very first edition of Two Daft Yanks for this year, 2015 AD, after Donovan.
Yeah.
Which Corey coined, which I think is hilarious.
It's a new era.
Yeah, so you enjoy your week. As always, thank you for listening to the podcast, because we do this for you and you alone. And so we hope you've had a great start to the new year.
I do this for me, but that's
well, yeah.
Other people are cool too.
Well, you're a jerk.
Yeah, well, that's, you know.
And so am I at times. So I'm a jerk for calling you a jerk.
No,
we should get Steve Martin on the show because we're a bunch of jerks.
Hey.
The jerk. Oh, boy. Anyway.
Yes. You call me anything you want. Just don't call me dishonest. That's it. That's the only thing I ask.
So, all right. For Corey Chatelain, I'm Chad Smith. Thank you again for listening. And we will catch you again soon, because I'm going to be out of town on business next week. So I don't know if there'll be a show.
Uh-oh.
But we'll let you know. Sorry, I forgot to tell you that. Yeah, it's live on air. Hey, there's no show next week because I got to go out of town.
Oh, man.
Unless we could get Corey set up to, you know, record this on his own and get a guest on.
Oof.
Which is possible, but you never know.
Just get me drunk and I'll just ramble for 20 minutes.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, you could do that too. So, all right. So, for Corey Chatelain, I'm Chad Smith. We will see you when we see you.
And for Ridiculous MLS Lampard Gate, I'm Corey Chatelain.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at twodaftyanks.com or at @twodaftyanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.